Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. You got some follow through this morning after the biggest S&P gain in 7 months. And once again, bank earnings impressed. Got a blowout number from Goldman. Retail sales for September as well show a surprise gain of 7/10. You got yields on the 2-year hitting a fresh pandemic high. Our roadmap begins with rally mode. Stocks are set to jump at the open. S&P coming off the best day since March. And as we said, retail sales surprised to the upside.
Plus Goldman Sachs shares, they are rallying. Ahead of the open, though, Wall Street Bank crushed earnings estimates as investment banking revenue. Well, we'll get to it. It was up a lot.
And getting a boost, an FDA panel backing Moderna COVID-19 boosters, and shares are moving higher on that news. To David's point, though, Goldman IB revenue up 88 is going to make Morgan Stanley's stellar number look soft.
Yeah, they've done in the first three quarters better than any year that Goldman has had in the history of the firm. We're talking about some incredible. They beat top line 16%. How about this? Bottom line 48%. I'm calling this a drop the mic quarter for Steve Scher, who is now retired.
He's the CFO, obviously.
CFO. It's kind of like Scher. You don't have to name who he is.
Many of our viewers have no idea who he is. No offense to him. Yeah, they don't.
Oh, that's his legacy? The unknown CFO?
I don't think he cares that much.
Not at all. He cares about the
unknown money. Yeah.
And when you speak to him, it's very clear he makes the point that I'm an idiot that I ever left because I could be a rich man.
Nobody's complaining.
Okay.
You should not be complaining.
I'm doing the bottle
dance. Nobody's holding a fundraiser for you, my friend. All right, get back to the numbers, Ted.
Okay. look, a lot of it is is M&A, okay, which could be episodic because we know we got a new FTC chairperson.
We do, although, I mean, on M&A, there is a lot of activity at a not lower level, but at a level that pays very high fees, but is not necessarily something we talk about that often. It's not headline deals.
Yeah, that's
those
a really good point.
Those kinds of deals you are not likely to see in this current regulatory environment, whether it's at the FTC or the DOJ. There is an expectation that you're going to be met with significant opposition potentially where you announce some sort of strategic kind of a deal.
No,
we'll see.
Right.
Nobody's even tried. That said, M&A is very strong.
Asset management, which, you know, is sticky. Talk about taking in $90 billion. I thought that was great. Now, here's something that we don't talk about enough. The Apple Card. They have 7 million customers. Now, I know you could say they should have X, you know, double that. But people told me they're going to be losing a couple billion on this. No. It's containable. And I think it's exciting. They've turned it back on. So, you know, you've got a company that if you believe that traders are that good and they're that lean, then you could argue that this company deserves, I don't know, I could say it could go to 500 without.
Wow. It does set up an interesting debate today because RBC does cut Morgan Stanley. And their argument is, in a raising rate environment, you're going to want the commercial banks.
Yeah, but you see, that's the old way of looking at things. Look, I like him, Cassie. I like RBC. I've known him for years. But what's happened this quarter is, and the reason why these things are up, is that the banks have really kind of disengaged from the notion, David, you can say, of this yield curve. Morgan Stanley is an asset gatherer. Okay, Bank of America has lots of different fees that are very sticky. I look at this Goldman number and I say to myself, you know what? It is now no longer episodic trading. It's just ingrained. And the yield curve, that's a very backward way of looking at these.
It may be. Yeah.
I really believe that.
Although we're moving in the right direction, we would be citing it as a potential positive for net interest income at the big banks.
I'm saying that look how much money they make, all of them, right now. And Morgan Stanley, we spoke to James Gorman.
We did.
The price earnings multiple has gone up. But I love a business where, you know, we used to say, oh, boy, the assets go out the door every day. They don't. That's another canard. There are a lot of canards that have been busted by this quarter.
Well, at Goldman, they may still. And at Morgan Stanley, to a certain extent. Don't forget, capital markets was very strong for Morgan Stanley, as it is, of course, within investment banking. And
but you're not buying my thesis that it's
well,
not
no,
weird. I'm talking about yield
that,
curve?
I mean, they still do go. Of course, these days, nobody goes in and out of the building. They go in and out of their bedroom. But
well, that's a good point.
Thank you. Yeah. But no, they do come in at Goldman and Morgan Stanley, actually. Well, but it's still important. It's still very important to both their businesses. Even at Morgan Stanley, it moved the needle a lot in terms of their performance, particularly in equity. equities.
But there's a step function that's so much greater than what the analysts are looking at that I don't think that we can talk about beat the estimates. This is not a beat the estimates quarter. What this is analysts, you better start thinking of these banks in a different way. Because they're not doing what you're thinking. They're making fortunes not. They've all figured out ways to make money away from the yield curve just in case we don't raise rates.
Right.
Did you just yawn?
No, I didn't yawn. That actually was not a yawn.
Yeah, no, that was. He yawns at other stuff, but
yes,
not that.
Thank
I mean,
you.
I was at the game last night. We might have been yawning because of the check swing?
Oh, it's Wilmer, too. That was Wilmer, an old Met. That was.
Check swing.
There's a lot of outrage today. Yeah.
There is.
About the need for robots at the plate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. AI. Metaverse.
Game five, arguably the two best teams in baseball. Ninth inning, two outs.
Switching to retail sales, Jim. 7/10. We were looking for, a decline at 2/10.
How can everyone be so wrong, Carl?
Yep. Yeah, sporting goods, restaurants, general merchandise, even in the face of things that you might not be able to find.
Well, I think that this was kind of a post-Delta. I mean, we had that pre-Delta. We had the big Delta scare. And now, I mean, we're talking, you listen to Meg, and the question is only how long your immunity lasts before do you go 6 months, do you go 8 months? We're not talking anymore about something that is life-threatening. It just seems like we're talking about something that I don't want to give you and you don't want to give me, but you would be out for a couple of days. I mean, when a guy from the NFL gets it, but he's been vaccinated, that guy can play in 10 days, game.
Yeah, I've been trying to make that point for a long time. Listen, it's still got a psychological impact if you say you have COVID, and it's still a concern. But the vast majority of people who have been vaccinated don't get particularly sick, thankfully. We're going to have boosters. We're also going to have the antiviral. We're now counting down. Now we're probably, Merck has already made the submission. So the expectation is molnupiravir will be available before the end of the year. Again, testing, though, still remains a very important component of all of this.
Right. That's why Abbott Labs is still not going down. I know a lot of people feel that Binax, which I carry everywhere. I carry Binax everywhere because I just feel like, let's test. To go to the NASDAQ today after this, I'm doing an interview with Adam Selipsky, who's this fantastic Amazon Web Services guy. But to go to the NASDAQ, you got to show test. And a lot of play. Last night at the Eagles game, I said, you guys want to see my card? And they said, no. See, that was a tip off of what was going to happen. No, I don't need to see your card. Don't you want to see my card?
It was all downhill from there?
Yeah, it was. No, I don't need your card. It's Philadelphia.
Back to the
Philadelphia. We don't need your card. In 1918, Philadelphia had the worst outbreak of the flu because that war bond drive.
Yes.
We don't need your card.
Well, to your point about the variant and the way it's impacted, say, labor, you talked to Domino's last night. We got two price cuts today from Webbush and RBC. They go
a lot of price targets.
$5.65.
It was a very sobering conversation I had with Rich Allison.
And largely about the driver shortage. Take a listen.
When you look more broadly at the engine that really drives, our business and our economics, it's retail sales growth. And retail sales growth was up 8.5%. On a trailing four-quarter basis, we opened over 1,100 net stores.
I'll tell you what's really shocking. You get to speak to guests a little bit off after interview, whatever. This is Rich Allison started, I think, a conversation that we're all going to have to talk about. We don't have population growth in this country, which historically has been the beginning of a decline of a civilization. But more importantly, he's saying, listen, we cut off immigration. We stopped it. But the great thing about our country is immigrants come in. They become drivers. Next thing you know, they own a Domino's. Then they own several days. He says, that's ended. And that we literally have to start thinking about an immigration policy that involves taking in people. Now, think about that. David, what kind of discussion is that when not that long ago the idea was we've got to keep people out?
Yeah.
Rich says we don't have enough people. Now, meanwhile, we're putting together a big stimulus plan. These are great jobs. They lead. They're entrepreneurial jobs. They start. You don't have to necessarily have a computer science degree from Stanford, which is what I always feel Washington demands that you have. And I just think that Rich has started a debate. Do we not have enough growth?
Well, he's not alone. He's not alone.
Well, who else is doing it?
No, he's not alone in saying that we need robust immigration, in part because, not to mention how many people are leaving the workforce, let alone to your
point. But who do you hear in Washington talk about? It's the third rail. It's a third rail in Washington.
It's been a very difficult issue for a long time. We obviously have not gotten a national consensus of any kind and or a law out of Congress. It was the Bush administration where they were close.
But how about this population shortfall? This is something we're going to be talking about. We don't have growth in this country. Now, you'll see these countries like Italy has no growth. And France has no, because
Japan,
they had no birth.
Famously.
Yeah. And
by the way, even China's very concerned about it. Remember, they went from 1 to 2 to 3 to unlimited. Basically unlimited
historically,
children now.
We've been a great growth country. You know, you'll look at the census, be 317, then it's 330.
In part because of immigration, yes.
Right. And maybe we have to start talking about not having enough people, as opposed to Washington thinking about we have to create more jobs. That is... These jobs, I'm not kidding. I've looked at Domino's and how many millionaires they've created out of people who just work hard. And they have to have driverless just to be able to grow. They need driverless.
I want to come back to the broader market, if I can, for a moment.
Okay.
We're coming off the best day since March.
Right.
The S&P, I believe. The pattern typically has been that we reverse whatever we had the day before.
Yes, until the last week of October, that has been the pattern.
And then we've also still got this question about Powell at the Fed. And by the way, that is not something to gloss
over. Do you know that you can bet on that?
You can bet on whether Powell's going to be reappointed?
Yes.
Well, Journal's got a piece out today from Nick Timiraos, who's oftentimes where they go to leak stuff. And White House officials argue that his chances of renomination have been dented by the trading disclosure controversy, but not dismantled.
I mean, these guys are all fiefdoms. I mean, it's not like Powell sitting there saying, look, I think we ought to talk about.
No, he has no real right. I mean, he has the Texas.
It's just so unfair if he's nailed for that. But David, I want to talk about something that you did yesterday.
Can we just finish this thought for a second? Because if you were to get a new Fed chair, I mean, the market typically tests a new Fed chair, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
And you would get so much bond issues.
I mean, remember what Powell went through initially?
I know. Boy, that was...
By the way...
His rookie year.
You were tough on him.
I was very tough on him because he said, what'd he go on, like, Ellen and said we need 3 rate hikes? Ellen? Let's go on The View and talk about taper. I mean, what was he talking about? Inside Edition. I think we ought to buy fewer bonds.
That's still on.
But I want to just talk about something that happened yesterday here. We had a guy who's arguably the smartest person in America, right? Because the guy won Jeopardy for 38 weeks, Matt Emoto. He represented the average person who's not talking about the Fed. He's not talking about Kaplan trading. He's not talking about retail sales. He's talking about, I just got $1.5 million, and what am I going to do? I'm going to put it in the stock market. The arguably smartest person in America, the guy who's going for a graduate degree in New Haven. And what do we hear? He just represents America. And all these people come on. I mean, I was watching some people this morning. They said, well, you know what? I think we have to switch into cyclicals or maybe. No. The average American is not even thinking about any of this nonsense.
And you did advise him, given he's a young guy, to be more allocated towards equities than he'd even thought that he should be.
But I think we have to think about the average smart person in this country does not think about all this insider stuff that we do. They're not thinking about the check swing, and they're not thinking about whether Hertz should have gotten it. What they're thinking about is, you know what? I like stocks. They make money. So I'm going to buy them.
Okay, great. Now you've given everybody a reason to turn the TV off.
Well, what else are you going to watch? Ellen? Oh, shoot. Is Jay on that? Jay, where's Jay right now? What's he doing? What show is he on?
I don't know. Has he not been texting
you? I think he's in Blaze.
Everybody
Netflix.
Texts you.
I think he's on Netflix.
All it's about is the NFL.
There's a big trade coming in Philadelphia. I'm not going to talk about it.
That's not right now.
Still
to come, we're going to break down some news on the boosters. Moderna, one of the biggest leaders on the S&P this week. Got some interesting downgrades of Micron and Western Digge. Tactical calls on Netflix, Facebook, Uber. Bitcoin above 60K. We're back in a moment. An FDA panel unanimously recommending Moderna COVID booster shots for at-risk adults. Meantime, Piper goes to overweight with a 445 target. At the same time, Jim, White House says we're going to get international travelers November 8th.
Wow.
If you're fully vaxxed.
And that's why these airlines are kind of interesting. I mean, you know, Delta stock went down a lot after 27% of their revenues from overseas. I'm starting to think, listen, you got to be thinking United. These people want to come here. I think you got to be thinking Disney. Disney's owned by my travel trust. But, you know, David, you know that when people come here, they go to Disney.
Disney's already flat out, aren't they, at the parks?
It's sold out.
It's not like they're suffering.
Do you go to Macy's? That's always been a huge chunk of their business is New York.
Yeah.
And we had some news there on Macy's that I'm surprised you haven't brought up yet.
Well, I don't, you know, Macy's is an old activist name. Remember our Jeff Smith took a run at that years ago?
What was it, the 70s, David? You told him, you put the wood to him.
I just don't feel as though that's worth, you know, mentioning at this point. We'll see what happens. Jana's not much, doesn't have much going on, frankly.
Should I take it back that I mentioned?
Yeah.
Well, we just had the worst decline for Delta shares in a year on that fuel.
I know, but I'm saying maybe it's de-risked because of that. Because
and by the way, that news, by the way, was out last week. The Macy's news. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's the main reason. It came out of that conference I was at.
Oh, okay. I meant. Yeah, you broke that story.
No, I didn't break it. It just happened.
Okay, you hid that story.
Sorry, go ahead.
But I think that what matters is this is all part and parcel of what's going on around the world. Like Italy, they're requiring. That means Italy tourism is going to come back big. The requirement is what we keep hearing about.
Not the mandate. The requirement.
The mandate is jackboot. The requirement.
Meanwhile, Merck stopped going up and Moderna's stopped going down. In fact, Merck's now back to flat on the year. It had been up 5%. It responded very positively to the news on molnupiravir for a great week it had, and now it's kind of reversed.
Candidly, we have the quarter coming. Mm-hmm. And the quarter's now, you know, J&J is going to have a good quarter, and they ring fenced the talc. That was a rather brilliant thing that they did. They created an entity and they immediately
There's
filed
a
for bankruptcy.
There's a long term Merck, but you can see that move up.
But Merck
is,
does not have
down.
Anything. You know, look, Merck has got a great cancer franchise.
Yes, Keytruda is a great drug.
But we keep thinking, what else do they have? And this is not ready to save them. It's kind of like Biogen. You know, see the number cuts, Biogen? They have to do with the fact that the Alzheimer's drug may not be as effective, so therefore it won't get backing.
Well, it's not getting coverage to a certain extent.
Yes,
a lot of doctors may not actually prescribe it.
The work I do for American Migraine Foundation and speaking with a lot of doctors, they don't feel it's nearly as effective, and it was outrageous that it got approved. Outrageous. People resigned. The doctors who were involved with saying no to this, highest end great doctors. The brain people that I deal with, and I deal with a lot of brain people, are like, are you kidding me? Maybe get like 3 months.
Yeah.
3 months. That's not enough for 56K?
Yeah.
Our system can't handle that.
No.
We talked about it when it first came through the regulatory process, and I'm sure we will for a while.
Boy, we're going to really focus on this because it's very important.
Kramer's Mad Dash coming up after the break. We'll get to the opening bell. Let's take a look at futures after that great day yesterday. S&P is going to open pretty much about 2% south of an all-time high. More Squawk on the Street in a moment.
Welcome back, everybody. Of course, we've got an opening bell to end trading for the week about 7 minutes or so from now. You want to talk Tesla in the Mad Dash?
I don't know if you've seen the stock of Tesla of late, but it's really breaking out here. I think it's going to take out a high. Why? Because we're beginning to hear Credit Suisse's three themes for third quarter, all very positive. Jefferies today goes price target 950. I'm going to tell you what, it isn't just enough that Musk builds superior cars. You know, one of the things that Jefferies liked here is that they are the best semiconductor sourcer in the group. In other words, Musk even gets the right semis. So there isn't, this is a magical quarter that's occurring. And I think that even here, Netflix and Tesla are going to be the two stars of this quarter because they're exciting. Tesla with this Berlin factory and sourcing. Netflix, obviously, with Squidward. And I know that's a joke. But I've got to tell you that these are the two ones that I think the hedge funds are going to gravitate to.
Tesla now eclipses, once again, I think, an $800-plus billion market value, making it.
So is he richer than Bernard Arnault, though? Is Musk again?
I haven't done the math lately.
Do you think
LVMH has been doing
very well,
pretty darn well?
But this
in part on the strength of the continued strength of the Chinese consumer.
I've been trying, David, to figure out Tesla and Netflix. You know, do you take one of the A's out? I mean, people don't like Apple,
right?
You don't know.
You can't do it.
There's an underperformance of Facebook note that came out
today.
You
cannot screw with Fang. You did it.
I created Fang,
and
I'm staying with Fang.
You got to stick with it.
Staying with Fang.
Just add Tesla in there.
I'm staying with the Eagles.
Does this mean you're positive on Tesla?
Yeah, I've been positive on Tesla since 200.
You have?
Yeah, ever since I drove one. Ever since I drove it.
All right.
I sat on the whoopee cushion, too, which I thought was really funny.
All right. That is a heck of a chart. Wow. All right. By the way, the opening bell just a few minutes away. And remember, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. You can listen to and follow the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? We're back after this.
Amazing.
I think crypto, you know, it's not a fad. It's not going away. And obviously the blockchain technology supporting it is a real innovation. We're not seeing among very wealthy clients, they might put, you know, I talk to people, maybe 1% of their portfolio in it. Nobody's putting 10% of their portfolio into it. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, a lot of people want to participate. They don't know how crypto is ultimately going to play out.
That's Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman with us yesterday talking crypto. We've got Bitcoin closing in on 60K, would be the first time in about 6 months, on pace for a third straight weekly gain, Jim, as we might get this ETF.
Yeah, I did not. I got a lot of blowback from what Gorman said from younger people who said that he's, you know, younger people, I'm talking about people in their 20s, 30s, even 40s, saying that that Mr. Gorman's a little out of touch and that the percentage that is Bitcoin, that is Ethereum, is actually 10, 15, 20. And that's in part because the younger people don't believe in the dollar. They don't believe it. They watch the $4 trillion this and $4 trillion that. And they say, you know what? This is a better investment than the dollar. And that's older people are not used to even questioning the dollar. But younger people just have said, I watch the coverages. I'm concerned.
How about the news that the SEC might not contest this ETF?
I hear they're going to do four. I think that some of the bigger exchanges might be involved. And I think that the short-term buying that's elevating it is the idea that when that ETF is created, there'll be a pop and they can sell some of their Bitcoin. There are some traders in the name, obviously. But the real blowback is that maybe the older people are really out of touch.
It's been a long trip back to the 60 range. Remember, it was in the spring we were talking about the $64,000 question of Bitcoin. There's the opening bell on the CNBC real-time exchange. At the big board, it's Paragon 28, maker of orthopedic medical devices, celebrating an IPO. At the NASDAQ, it's Rose Hill Acquisition, a Latin American focus on tech company, celebrating its IPO. Got some volume down here.
When you keep hitting these highs, yesterday was a day that a lot of people say maybe it's over. I don't know if it's over, but there is excitement. And if you listen to Goldman Call, we're kind of in an era where people say, you know what? Gotta own stocks.
Well, it certainly would appear that they want to own them today. Yes. The green back on the board,
but
there at the real-time
exchange. Don't you think you can come in on Monday, though, and something happens in Taiwan, and we thought, what were we doing?
Oh,
you
go.
Know the South China, you saw the papers saying that there's maneuvers being done to be ready to take over Taiwan by the PRC. That's not in the market. And every day the drumbeat gets louder and louder.
Jim, just on charts, you got the S&P now back above the 50-day. There'd been a lot of discussion about the downtrend the last month and a half. Is it broken?
No, I mean, I expected a lot more big misses in different lines in the banks, including loans, balance sheet of individuals, and they're so much stronger. And then you take the retail sales number and you start saying, wait a second, is there some sort of outside baseball track that's much more powerful than the inside baseball track that maybe the consumer's weaker? I think the consumer, when you listen to the Bank of America call, it's obvious consumer strong. Morgan Stanley, consumer very strong. Goldman, credit card, business strong.
We see the retail sales numbers today
as well.
Well,
but this is not part of the narrative. This is a different narrative.
Right.
I'm saying that the gloom of Wall Street is not shared with Main Street. That's how I'm putting it.
You made the point yesterday about savings and about how much money people basically have to potentially spend.
The younger people have five times what they had going into the pandemic.
Clearly that's happening with that 11% year-over-year increase.
If you had $10,000, $20,000 in your bank account, you're up dramatically. And so there's a lot of money going around. And then you see earnings like J.B. Hunt, okay? Now, I didn't like J.B. Hunt's number. They talk a lot about how they have labor problems, they can't find work, but the bottom line was good. What keeps happening is that these companies are able to make great money, even though the fates are against them. The J.B. Hunt is really, remember, this is the third largest trucker. And they had some very interesting things to say about no truck, can't find truckers, but they can still coin money.
Well, and I know you had been frustrated with UPS in the charitable trust. But that is back to at least a 1 month high.
Well, UPS had a couple of meetings. You know, Carol Tomei is unbelievable. She used to be a CFO at Home Depot, but they got pulled down by FedEx, and they got pulled down by their own analyst meeting. We don't know what the substance of what President Biden is saying about what they need to do in the ports. But I did have this fellow, Lior Ron, on last night. Now, he's in charge of Uber trucking, Uber freight. And they are creating a model where we're going to have a lot of short-term truckers. But what he told me was, you have to understand that many truckers sense that they can make far more money on their own. So what you're seeing is going away from the J.B. Hunt, starting to do two, three, four trucking, you know, to buy some trucks. And it's not going to be solved. But he does think that we're getting closer to where it's going to come out that we've got a lot more drivers because of Uber. Isn't that something?
It is something. And it's, and by the way, you know, to the degree we've had disappointments on the jobs print, those jobs aren't counted as jobs.
No. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Are we undercounting the amount of labor?
I think we are. The one thing that I keep hearing is there's this moment. I remember from my father, this was when the trucker comes to your place and it's who unloads it? Does the customer unload it? And what's happening, and this is something that Uber said to me yesterday, it's this battle in the warehouse of who unloads, who loads. And it's kind of like the ports, who unloads, who loads. We have to solve this last, not last mile, I'm calling it, last foot. I'm doing last foot. You like it?
Sure.
You do, don't you?
Yeah, last foot.
Have you adopted already?
No, but I'm working with it, though.
I urge you to
adopt. Not the last mile, it's the last foot.
Yeah, can you use it on the 10 o'clock show?
We might.
Okay.
We might go there.
Thank you.
I did notice that, well, again, I don't want to. The broader market up almost 0.5%. Apple shares lagging once again.
Well,
Jim, we've talked a lot about it this week, whether it's new products potentially coming, obviously, questions about their ability to get enough chips to maintain production levels.
But do you see that Goldman recommended Broadcom today?
And
that's been the, you know, people feel that's the bottleneck. I felt from reading the Goldman note that maybe things are not as tight.
Right.
I feel Apple is like Tesla. They will source what's needed. They will. That's an amazing upgrade because if you look at Broadcom,
AVGO,
it was really slammed the other day. But Hock Tan, you've always taught me that Hock Tan gets his man, CEO of Broadcom.
Yeah, Goldman says we're most uncertain on trends in automotive, but at a high level, they expect device types that contribute to automotive, like power management, microcontrollers, to fare better than other components and to buck seasonal patterns.
And what is their favorite stock still in the group?
Is it AVGO?
AMD. Lisa Su.
Yes.
Throughout this period, there's one person that has been a beacon in this group. Lisa Su. And then they like NVIDIA, okay?
Yeah.
And they like Marvell. Now, Marvell, David, is not Silver Surfer. It's not the Avengers. Marvell is a semiconductor company.
I'm aware.
That does
Thank
high
you,
performance
though.
Computing.
Thank you. Yep.
And so it's three. It's Marvell, it's NVIDIA, and it's AMD. That's what Goldman wants you to own, but they like Broadcom now. Remember, those guys are all high performance computers that I mentioned. I have Amazon Web Services on tonight, and they are Marvell makes specialized chips. Like that you need for the cloud. I love Marvell. We had Murphy on this week. Very competitive guy.
We're going to get some earnings next week. Netflix on Tuesday. And by the way, Evercore today names Netflix a tactical outperform. Best net stock relative to the estimates going into the print.
You know, they spent $1 billion developing Korean programming. So it's not like they just, you know, one day woke up and said, well, let's have a great movie. But rarely have I seen one movie move a stock, one program move a stock like this has. And it has gripped America. I find that when I talk with people last night, were we talking about the Eagles? No, we wanted to know who is watching this program. It has gripped America, David.
Actually, the world.
The world.
Yeah, which goes to the power of the Netflix platform. Remember, this was a program produced not in this country,
Korea,
in South Korea, and obviously has a great currency around the world. Maybe not North Korea; they don't seem to like it too much.
North Korea,
but I don't know that they have a lot of Netflix viewers in North Korea.
But North Korea has soldiers now with their on hot coals. Did you read that? They're having their soldiers be on beds of nails. I mean, I actually know someone who's been to North Korea.
Yes,
Carl. Yeah. Well, not
Well, you put on the
point. Right to the edge.
Well, he looked at it. He looked at it.
You were right there. That was one of the great moments of TV.
With Russia. He looked at it.
But he looked, it was like on the bridge, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was good enough. That was far enough.
I loved it. That was great TV.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. The Winter Olympics.
That was a long time.
Coming
up, wasn't
it? Coming up 4 years.
Guys, I did want to get back to the financials because we started the show, of course, with Goldman Sachs. The stock's up about 2+%. We're actually seeing a rally across the board in many of the names, all of which have now reported earnings, whether it's J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citi, Goldman, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, amongst the biggest financial institutions in the country. And they're all up. Goldman is having the best performance. Elite. Well, actually, Citi showing a little strength here, up 2%.
Yeah, Frazier really did it.
We don't really, you know, there is a transformation going on there to some extent. She hasn't communicated that much as of yet as they sort of work through it. It does have by far the smallest market value. Well, Goldman is a bit behind it, but of a bank of that size, it's less than $150 billion market cap.
But remember, it's got $78.79 tangible book. Which means for people at home, the more they buy of the stock, the better things are. It's accretive.
Right.
That's not the case with the J.P. Morgan. By the way, we haven't talked much about J.P. Morgan.
Well, I feel like we've talked about it almost every day.
No, I meant that it's underperformance versus the group.
Well, its earnings were not as good.
It's not zeitgeist?
Am I wrong?
I think there's a zeitgeist component. We expect the most of J.P. Morgan. So they are an A-plus student. So they delivered an A because, remember, I want to go back. It was a great quarter.
Yeah.
It should not have been down 4 that day. That was a brutal day.
People worry that it's the creeping influence and impact of fintech, right, on credit cards.
Well, I mean, Jamie is adamant that he's missed fintech, even as fintech. Look at a company like Upstart. Now, Upstart's one of the greatest performers ever, okay?
Yes.
And, you know, Wells Fargo, which did not have a great quarter, adopted Upstart. This is a way, it's AI loans, the way they do it in China. And I just find that Jamie is like, Jamie's an old-fashioned banker. I'm not saying he's a dinosaur. I'm not saying he's a troglodyte. I'm not going there with the Velociraptor. Look at that.
I do
say that he seems to go out of his way, Bitcoin. Oh, it's a fraud. We don't have it. Who's got the Square? Anyone got the Square?
By the way, Square is $115 billion market value.
Why?
I mean, you think about the accretion of market value to these newer companies.
Do you know what Square would tell you why that is? Because they're willing to back people who J.P. Morgan's not interested in.
Yep, that's
they,
right.
They don't, you know, J.P. Morgan, have J.P. Morgan gotten away from the very concept of helping the small to medium-sized business technologically?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think that there's something to that. Obviously, we've talked a lot about PayPal.
Don't you think Jamie's dismissive of a lot of this new technology?
I don't know.
You know what he does? He does the class. He goes, oh, yeah, we got blockchain.
It can be a side effect of getting older.
Charlie Scharf's adopting Upstart.
He?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie Scharf, is anyone allowed to work there?
Why don't you explain to people what Upstart does? Because sometimes I think we gloss over
these
things.
No, it's not FICO. It's the end of FICO is what I like.
Well, these are all these AI algorithms that allow people,
It's more accurate than FICO.
Much more accurate. That goes back to what I was talking about yesterday, though, with the pay, buy now, pay later.
Well,
and what they've been able to do there.
Max Levchin.
AI that powers a lot of that.
Yes.
And allows them to make good decisions about who to lend to.
His loan losses are much lower. Okay. But, you know, Rocket Mortgage's loan losses are low. And where's that stuff?
That has not had a great move.
I mean,
since it went public.
No, Rocket has been disappointing. And, no, I love Dan Gilbert.
I know you do.
Jay. I think Jay's really good, but it doesn't matter. You can't buck the trend.
Speaking of rockets, I want to get you on two names. Space, a 5-month low as they push back their commercial service timeline.
Yeah.
And Boeing, with the indictment of this ex-pilot as this 737 MAX criminal prosecution continues.
You know, in Eagles went 3 and out 3 times, right in a row. It was a Boeing moment. I'm now thinking, even though the Chapel Trust owns Boeing, and I keep waiting, that when something goes awry, it's a Boeing moment. Like the check swing last night, it's a bit of a Boeing.
Mm.
I think we have to start using it as a descriptive.
That's terrible.
What do you got to go in this weekend? No, we'll play it out.
I'm going up to Boston.
You probably might not be Boeing.
No,
I mean, Boeing
I'm hoping
is like,
not for a Boeing.
You know, Penn State doesn't play tomorrow. It's kind of Boeing, you know. no game. You know, like North, you know, Panthers, they lost to the Eagles. That was a Boeing moment for Dave Tepper, right? It's you know, we're going to be talking like this. I had a Boeing week on Monday. If my weekend's no good,
yeah,
I was, that was kind of a Boeing weekend.
Well, and it wasn't the only news this week. The Journal with that piece about, well, actually, the statement from the company.
The 787?
About components, about yeah.
I mean, what is going on at Boeing?
All right, so why do you still own it in your charitable trust?
Because if the Chinese place the order, if there's a recognition that there's nobody left to indict or go after. But I want to know, is this a runaway grand jury, David, down there?
I've never heard you be more negative on a stock you own, so to speak.
Well, I'm a self-flagellist from way back.
In the early days of self-flagellation.
I just look, it's now a good American company. I want it to be a great American company again. They have to sacrifice. You know what you have to do? They have to sacrifice some people. They have to sacrifice. Say, listen, FAA, anybody who touched the 737, they're gone. That's my suggestion. I think it's got to be a root and branch purge of anyone who touched. And if they come back and say, well, everyone touched it, then everyone has to go. You can't do this. David, you can't have a product. You can't have a product that was defective, where there were people who knew it was defective, okay? And are prosecuted for fraud because they knew they didn't want to. Remember, what they did was they didn't want to have new people have to be trained on it, which was, in retrospect, whether it's saying it's criminal. And so it's time for root and branch. Anyone who touched the 737 has to go. Period. End of story. Hard stop.
Stock hasn't done much this year. A lot of debt.
Live load.
A lot of debt on that balance sheet.
Live load. They have to do an equity offering. Just get it over with. But it's time. 730. Did you work on the 737? Boom. Okay. Required. And I wish I were kidding. But we. I don't think that. No one's going to let these guys go until they say, we've done it. It's just like Charlie Scharf. He has sacrificed everybody. And it's. They're. Now starting to get to be the good graces.
At Wells Fargo, you're
yes, you must sacrifice. And it's a terrible thing to say, but everyone's got to be sacrificed to touch that thing.
With that, though, the S&P and the Dow within 2% of all-time highs. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday. Only had really two great days this week. The start of the week was pretty bad. 3-1 advancing to declining stocks right now. We're up about 1.5%. For the S&P 500, and it's retail stocks doing well on those retail reports, and banks as well. Banks are having a good week. Remember, banks traditionally sell off once earnings start. That's not happening right now. But you see Nordstrom's having a great day, Kohl's doing great, Macy's doing great in the retail space. Banks also up. Goldman just knocked it out of the ballpark again. They're really pulling the earnings numbers up for the S&P 500. Energy tech lagging, but still on the upside. A lot of banks this week, but I do want to note J.P. Hunt, big intermodal. Jim mentioned them. The important thing here is they're the one to watch when you're having logistics problems. They reiterated what we've been hearing all throughout the third quarter so far. Demand is strong, but there are labor shortages out there. And they reference three specific areas: rail networks, truck networks, that's the intermodal system they run, and they added customer warehouses for labor shortages. So these labor shortages are limiting their utilization, their ability to keep moving things and have equipment out there, trucks, for example, and limiting the capacity to deliver. They're the whole problem, logistics problem, and the labor problem in a nutshell with J.B. Hunt. Good example here. By the way, J.B. Hunt's up 4%, got a new high on that particular stock. Bank earnings are moving the market higher. Goldman took the numbers up. I just want to point out earnings up there. We've had 41 companies reporting so far, not just banks this week. Average earnings growth, 27%. That's about in line with the estimates. The average beat is 14.7%. That's good. It was much lower earlier in the week. Goldman and the rest of the banks are bringing up the average earnings beats. Remember, historically, it was about 3 to 5%. Last few years, it's been big beats, around 11, and that's now 14. So pretty good numbers overall. And while the market is moving up on better bank earnings, the bigger banks aren't moving that much. Bank of America has had great numbers. They're up. But as Jim pointed out, Wells Fargo didn't have a particularly great quarter, and J.P. Morgan is still down. U.S. Bancorp still down on the week. I think the important thing is that the bank index, the bank ETF, KBE, oh boy, this has been quite a mover here. You've got to go back to 2007. We're sitting at essentially new highs going back almost 15 years for the bank index to just prior to the great financial crisis. So big move up in banks, particularly since the bottom. Finally, we've been talking about it all throughout the morning. We are waiting for the possibility of a Bitcoin futures ETF to come. I say possibility because the SEC theoretically can put the kibosh on this up till midnight on Monday. But if they don't, it's going to go through. A futures ETF, Bitcoin futures, will be trading on Tuesday. It'll be pro shares. They'll be ringing the bell down here. That's a futures contract. A lot of people are unhappy about this. They want a pure Bitcoin ETF. But as Gensler has indicated, there are real problems with this because we lack the regulatory oversight that they need to really control the exchanges and other things. A Bitcoin futures contract, Carl, is going to reduce that problem because you don't have custody issues. You don't have people who are having their Bitcoin accounts and exchanges hacked by cyber criminals in Russia. So a Bitcoin futures contract solves the problem that Gensler has, which is moving forward on crypto exchange, on crypto in general, but still working to get more regulatory control over the whole crypto space. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. Bob Pisani. Dow's up 234, just about 1.3% away from a record high. Got the VIX down to 16. Whew. And take a look at the bond report, Treasuries this morning, as we did see a little bit of a pop in the short-term two-year yield on some of these retail sales numbers. 10-year hovering right around 156. Squawk on the Street. We'll continue after a break.
The Milken Institute Global Conference returning to an in-person gathering this year in Los Angeles, California, and I will be there live interviewing some big guests. We'll have the CEOs of Chevron, Siemens, Carlyle. You can see that there. A lot more. And by the way, the beauty of that as well is that you never know who's coming through.
And you know who the star of that group is?
That's just a few.
It's Carmine DeCibio. Carm.
He's an old friend of yours.
You talk to him about, yeah. You talk to him about ESG. He knows more than anybody in the world.
I will. I will talk to Carmine about ESG. Of course, we'll also talk about back to the office. So many other things, of course, specific to each of those companies. Looking forward, though, to getting back to in-person.
Wow.
You put a tie on?
Caterpillar today naming their first sustainability officer and tying in ESG into the 2020 incentive plan.
Bumblebee is real. He knows that you have to do it. Pages 6 and 7, you know, the Bank of America, right up front, was what they've done for the community. This is a new world, and it's a positive one. Business is the greatest source, greatest platform of social change. Business, not the government.
Yep. Policy's not dragging compared to business. Yep. We'll get Stop Trading with Jim in a minute. Dow's up 275. It's time for Jim and Stop Trading.
It's a Matthew McConaughey moment. I got to meet him. He's unbelievable. Ford, okay? The Lincoln is selling out in China. The Lincoln is the most profitable car they have. There's a huge market share gain by Ford. And remember, what they have a price position far above Cadillac, similar to BMW, completely different from the USA. And the Chinese love the Lincoln.
Wow.
Is that something? That's where the profits are going to come from. It is growing really fast, and I don't think anyone is talking about the Lincoln selling out. That's what's moving their China numbers.
Oh, that's going to
be that something?
Yeah,
Lincoln.
That's incredible.
I met Matthew McConaughey. He's the smartest, coolest guy. He's cooler than Matt Imodio. I got the right Matt. You got some other Matt.
Is he going to run for office?
Graduate degree.
Potentially thinking about running for
Senate. He's a poet.
A little wobbly, I think.
He's so cool that I just said, listen, I can't. I'm like scared. Like, you're just too cool. I can't talk to you.
How about tonight, Jim?
Amazon Web Services, perhaps the most important entity in business today. Adam Selipsky, back from Salesforce after they bought Tableau. It is so exciting. And I have not given up on the Eagles. I believe. I bleed green. I love them. Howie Roseman will do what's necessary to get us in the Super Bowl eventually. Oh,
what's
yes,
this?
There you go.
That's last night?
Yeah, well, I liked it. You know, it's a Brioni. I got it tailored in Milan.
You almost got him, Jim. Almost, that would have been a huge upset, a beautiful upset.
Yeah.
We'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.